we ready for the 1163 item, Commissioner Fish? Can we go ahead and start a couple minutes early? Okay, then let's read 1163 and proceed.
Accept the Age-Friendly Cities Progress Report.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to welcome some honored guests to the podium as I make my opening remarks. Dr. Margaret Neal, Director of the Institute on Aging at Portland State University, Leslie Foran, Executive Director of Elders in Action, and Deborah Stein from the City's Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. As the City Council liaison to Elders in Action, I'm honored to bring forward this first annual report of our action plan for an age-friendly Portland. Last October, Council adopted this action plan, which will help Portland become better prepared as our population ages. With the first wave of retirements of the baby boomer generation upon us, Portland is preparing for the changing needs of our older adults. We want to be a community that supports the needs of everyone, including older adults, and value their contributions to our community. 1 year into our action plan for an age-friendly Portland, we can see a growing commitment to aging in our policies, community activities, and partnerships. After the report is presented, council members will have an opportunity to renew our commitment to building an age-friendly Portland by signing a pledge that our friends have brought with us. So to kick off the presentation, I'm going to turn to Margaret.
Actually, I think I'm going to kick it off, and then we'll
kick off our presentation and turn it over to Deborah.
So good morning. I'm really pleased to be back here a year after presenting this age-friendly action plan to you a year ago. I'm really honored to be working with these amazing colleagues. We've just been having a great year working on the Age-Friendly Portland Advisory Council. And I'm just really proud of our city. I've had the opportunity to talk to a number of representatives from other cities that are part of the Age-Friendly Network in the country and even some international cities. And we really are doing some great work. Other cities are looking to us. We're also learning from other cities as well. But in talking to other cities, I've observed a couple of things that I think really make Portland stand out and help propel some of our success in moving towards being an age-friendly city. And the first is that we have this amazing partnership with our not-for-profit partners, Metro, Multnomah County, a number of advocacy and service providers, but I'd say in particular, Portland State University has just been a phenomenal partner with their research capacity, but also the way they've been able to convene this group and keep us going. So I really want to give credit to this partnership, and I think we're continuing to expand it as we see other people and other contributors who will really make this a successful effort. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, as you know, Portland has a longstanding culture of community engagement, and I think that's really a big contributor to our success in becoming and continuing to be more of an age-friendly city. The third thing is that while my particular niche is the built environment, I think in our efforts as a city, we're really looking at both the built environment and the social environment and how all of those are important facets of being an age-friendly city. And finally, we have this great opportunity because we are updating our city's comprehensive plan right now. We not only have these ideas that are good ideas that can be in a report and sit on a shelf, but we're actually able to embed some of those concepts into a binding document to give our city direction for how we invest and how we grow and how we move into the future. So I think that that's a really good opportunity to memorialize these concepts and build them into our future. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Leslie.
Thanks, Deborah. Good morning, Mayor Hales. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Leslie Foran, and I'm the Executive Director of Elders in Action. We are honored to work with our council liaison, Commissioner Nick Fish, to serve as the federally mandated advisory council to the City of Portland and Multnomah County. We have been honored to work with the Age-Friendly Cities Project since its inception in 2006. We have been so encouraged this year that the City of Portland has embraced the vision and goals of becoming an age-friendly city, and has worked closely with the Advisory Council and the community in this first year of implementation. At this time, I'd like to recognize several of the Advisory Council members and volunteers that are here in the audience who have been a critical part of this initiative. At this time, if you'd please stand.
Give them a round of
applause. Thank you.
Today, I want to share with you three brief examples just so you can see how the city has engaged and partnered with Elders in Action in building an age-friendly community in this first year. This first year, we created and implemented a program with the Portland Police Bureau Elder Crimes Units to establish having two volunteer advocates in the unit on a weekly basis to assist older adult victims of crime. We are not only helping combat crimes against older adults, but we're working towards reducing isolation and helping to link individuals to additional services and resources the city has available. We also implemented a service learning project titled Action, Passion, Talent equals Civic Engagement. During the five-session series, participants attended and volunteered in a candidate's form, had a city hall tour, and a one-on-one conversation with Commissioner Fish and his staff. At the county, we were also given a tour by Commissioner Loretta Smith, and the series concluded with lunch and conversations with the ONI staff and neighborhood activists. Our intention was to demystify the language and places of civic engagement, as some had never been to City Hall, and to help the participants explore how they personally wanted to be involved in their neighborhood and community. Lastly, this past year, we've worked collaboratively with the Revenue Bureau, department staff regarding the art tax, and how to effectively reach out to the most vulnerable citizens. In order for Portland to be an age-friendly city with respect to communication and information, it is important to provide information in a range of ways that are easy to find and easy to understand and access. It is also important for city to utilize existing organizations to help disseminate this important information. It has been a great privilege to partner on this exciting initiative, and I am so proud of the work that we have accomplished together this year. Together, we are building an age-friendly city. I look forward to our continued collaboration with the city and the council on ensuring we all have an opportunity to age with dignity in the city we call home.
Thanks, Leslie. My name is Margaret Neal. I'm the director of the Institute on Aging at Portland State University, and I and Dr. Alan De La Torre coordinate the Age Friendly Portland Advisory Council. Thank you, Mayor Hales, Commissioners Fritz and Fish and Novick, for this opportunity to report back to you on the progress that we've made related to the Age Friendly Portland Initiative over this first year since you approved the action plan last October. I want to thank you for your leadership and your support of this work, and also all of our community partners and volunteers who we've worked with over this past year and into the future. I want to take just a few minutes to highlight a few activities that we engaged in over the past year. Our action plan contains 10 domains of action, and we chose an advisory council to focus on three for our first year. They included, first, civic engagement and volunteerism. Older adults are one of the few natural resources that actually are increasing, and they have an important role to play in civic affairs. It's vital that older and younger people together alike be encouraged to work toward improving our community. The second area that we focused on was economic development and employment. Older adults represent an economic resource as employees, entrepreneurs, and consumers. And then the third area that we worked on was housing. Healthy, affordable, accessible, and secure housing is a basic need for people of all ages and abilities. We chose to prioritize those three areas because of cost. We were not requesting any city funding for that first phase of the work, and also interest and expertise of our advisory council members. Each of those areas is led by an advisory council member and includes other council members, an IOA researcher, and then a number of other community stakeholders, including older adults. Each of these committees has been very active over the past year. I'll just highlight a couple of activities that they've been engaged in. As all of you know, in September, we held an event called What Are Old People For? Building a Community for All Ages. This was convened by AARP, Elders in Action, and PSU, and it was a kickoff event aimed at increasing community awareness of the skills and the talents and the contributions of older adults and encouraging engagement programs designed to stimulate intergenerational dialogue. And Mayor Hales spoke. Mr. George Hocker spoke for Commissioner Fish. County Commissioner Judy Shiprack spoke. State Treasurer Ted Wheeler, Senator Ron Wyden, and myself. And the keynote speaker was Dr. Bill Thomas, who was the author of this book, What Are Old People For? And we included a number of presentations by Geezer Gallery, Bonnie Vorenberg Senior Resource Theater, Aunt Roger Anison, performances by Golden Harvest and Comedy Sports. Over 400 people registered for the event. It was also live streamed on Brand Live. It's available to view. And we will continue to work in the coming year with our partners on more intergenerational programs and have a culminating event next fall. There's a discussion guide for any group that would like to hold intergenerational dialogues amongst small groups on the Age Friendly Portland website. Turning to economic development and employment, there were a number of events held by AARP Oregon and Elders in Action. They included, I'll just read a couple of the titles: Preparing for an Aging Boom, Best Practices for Employers, Finding Work at 50 Plus. Elders in Action, you didn't mention your age-friendly business work that you did in the Lloyd District, which was fabulous work. The Economic Development and Employment Committee as a whole has a couple of events planned for this coming spring focused on encore entrepreneurs and also older workers.
Excuse me.
And then the Housing Committee has adopted a multifaceted approach to advancing age-friendly housing in the Portland region. Educational resources have been developed to inform housing producers, consumers, and policymakers of the benefits of age-friendly housing and how to develop and design it and locate it. We've been analyzing data to identify housing-related trends in the city and the region and presented those at various conferences. We've been working very actively with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff on the revisions to the comprehensive plan, preparing written comments and detailed testimony. We, together with City Club, sponsored a member-led forum at Multnomah County Library on various housing models. Governing Magazine and AARP National held an event in Portland to highlight the importance of age-friendly and livable communities. That included presentations by a number of our age-friendly Portland partners. And there was recently, just at the end of October, a housing-related forum focused on strategies to facilitate aging in one's community. And finally, I'd like to just highlight one of our community partners, Bridge Meadows, which is a three-generation housing community consisting of homes for adoptive families and apartments for elders 55 and over, in which older adults volunteer 100 hours per quarter with one or more of the adoptive families. It is a national model, and just at the end of last month, they received the prestigious National Eisner Award for $100,000. So that was great news for that partner. We've been working on keeping our website up to date so that people can go there and find information about age-friendly related activities. We've also been engaged in a lot of national and international consultation. We've talked with AARP's national office concerning evaluation of age-friendly initiatives and their creation of the AARP Livability Index. We've been consulting with University of Hawaii and the City of Honolulu on its age-friendly effort, and also the City of Miami. We've worked with the American Planning Association on its guide to aging policy. And we hosted, all of the community partners hosted a two-day site visit by Grantmakers in Aging's community agenda grantees so they could come and see the various infrastructure improvements that we've made to make our city more age-friendly here, and also the social programs that we have in our city. Just week before last, Multnomah County passed a resolution to adopt the same 10 action areas that are in the Age-Friendly Portland Action Plan so that the county can become more age-friendly, and also apply to join the World Health Organization's global network of age-friendly cities and communities. There have been a number of advocacy efforts, and I will just close by AARP Oregon and Elders in Action. I'll close by saying that Portland is considered a national and international leader, not only in urban design and development and sustainability, also now in the age-friendly communities movement. We have a lot of work still to do. We've launched a number of actions to better engage Portlanders across the generations, to shape age-friendly policies, to begin to involve the business sector, and work toward creating housing that's accessible and innovative. At our October meeting of the Advisory Council, we selected two additional domains to focus on this coming year. They will include transportation and health services. And we will continue, of course, our work in the original three domains. I'd also like to just point out that we will be asking for funding at some point to help coordinate this work, to continue this work. Just so you know, New York City just committed $400,000 to the New York Academy of Medicine so that they can create 10 age-friendly neighborhoods. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor, just to give you a sense of the run of the show, we have a chance now to ask some questions. Carla, has anyone signed up to testify?
Just one person.
So we'll have some testimony. There's a formal part where we're going to be asked to sign a pledge, and we have an original and three copies for the entire council to sign. And then I want to make a closing comment about Leslie Foran, and then we'll do our closing remarks. So
okay,
let's,
great.
Let's maybe start with any questions the council has.
Sounds
are you ready for that? Questions questions for this great panel. I've got one. You stressed quite a bit the importance of the comp plan, mm-hmm. innovative models for housing. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested in that discussion. Let me sort of personalize that. I have a friend, her name's Lois. She moved to Portland from rural Virginia. She used to live across a dirt road from my parents, and when her husband died, she didn't want to live in a single-family house anymore. She wanted to live in a place where she could live independently, so she chose Portland. And moved all the way from Virginia to here, which was a brave thing to do, I think, and moved into Holiday Park Plaza, at which point she also became a volunteer at the art museum. And so she lived this lifestyle and continues to live this lifestyle where even though she can drive, she doesn't have to, and she can walk to shopping, she can walk to a movie theater, she can walk, as she frequently does, across a great city park, to light rail or to good transit and get to where she wants to go, including to her volunteer work at the art museum. She's an accomplished artist. She particularly appreciates, Commissioner Fritz, the wonderful improvements that have happened in Holiday Park over the last year, as a lot of people in Holiday Park Plaza do, the great partnership with Cypress Equities and the Parks Bureau that have transformed the social life in that park. And so Lois is living the example of us as a successful city. But that lifestyle is only possible in a small number of city neighborhoods today. Mm-hmm. We have about half our neighborhoods where it meets a basic test of urban livability, where you can walk on a sidewalk, where there is a neighborhood park, where there is transit within a reasonable distance that can get you somewhere soon. And so, in addition, those great facilities like Holiday Park Plaza and the Mirabella are both expensive and have long waiting lists. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of work to do to create models of both scale, affordability, and distribution across the city where people can live the kind of lifestyle that Lois is living in more neighborhoods at different price points than today. So I just want to encourage, it's not so much a question as a pep talk, I want to encourage this work, and I don't think we have all the answers about what those tools should be. But for example, is it possible to create a small scale shared housing project mm-hmm. on a neighborhood main street at 122nd and Division or 92nd and Stark or lots of places where, again, if the rest of the infrastructure is there, if we have the funds to start building sidewalks and we start building more sidewalks, if TriMet improves services on 122nd as they hope and plan to do, if everybody does their job and if developers can make a reasonable profit off building a 10-unit mm-hmm. senior housing project instead of a 200-unit project, you see my point. So these discussions involve all of us because our bureaus have to step up in order to make this happen and provide infrastructure and services. But we also have to be able to do this legally in our zoning code. And my sense is we're not as creative as we need to be in order for Lois's experience to be possible in a lot more places quickly.
I agree.
So I don't know if you want to comment on that.
We'll have a lot of thing. We'll have a lot of.
I threw a lot on the table. Sorry, but yeah, this is a a really big deal for us as a city. Yeah. I think.
I'd also just like to amplify that all the ingredients of what you described as being this ideal set of ingredients of a healthy, connected city are what really benefit all generations.
Sure,
and
that's
so
right.
Younger people also are craving more places.
Right, but younger people might also ride their bike on, you know, the edge of a street that doesn't have a bike lane.
But it's the beauty of an age-friendly city is it's really a city that meets the needs of all generations, and there's so many commonalities between what people are looking for.
And if we can build that place, we will have a lot of national and international visitors.
Well, and I think a lot of folks in Portland that maybe are today living in different forms of housing, whether it's rental housing or a single-family house, that would really like to see that model.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll find that just as, you know, we weren't sure if there would be a market for mixed-use development.
Right.
We weren't sure, you know, the Oregonian opined at the time that no one would ride light rail when we first were considering the first project. So, you know, we've been wrong about the size of the market for these lifestyles that we've partially created in the city, partially facilitated. So Godspeed and keep up the good work, because this comp plan really is our shot,
at
getting those things in place so that people, nonprofits, for-profit developers, neighborhoods, whoever wants to organize around that work can do so.
If I could just echo what the mayor said, we'd be interested, I think, through the comp plan to know what are the existing code requirements that might need tightening, and then what are the incentives that we ought to consider. And I think our thinking is evolving about what we need to mandate in terms of accessible housing. We should be building rental housing that's accessible for everybody, and that, therefore, an older adult has the choice. Right now, too many units are not accessible, and therefore you're essentially disqualifying an older adult from renting that place. So I'd be interested in what's the right mix of legislating requirements, and also, since we're taking a look at all of our incentive programs, what kinds of incentives could we give people? Older adults like garden apartments. They like first-floor apartments. They like apartments that are laid out a certain way. And buildings can respond. The market can respond if we're clear about what we're looking for. You have commissioner liaisons from everyone on council, and I look at this, and it's an all-star lineup. Jackie Dingfelder from the mayor's office, Jasmine Wadsworth from Commissioner Fritz's office, Stacy Brewster from Dan's office, Erica Niebel from Steve's office, of course, George Hawker from mine. Just a generic question. Are you getting the access you need to each of us, both FaceTime with us and also building relationships with the liaison, so that's a meaningful process?
Yes, we are, although we could do more in that arena. We should probably reach out more frequently to our liaisons and then have one-on-one meetings with each of you, too.
You know, I encourage you to think about a regular check-in. Our schedules get very crowded, and putting something on the calendar can always be canceled if there's nothing urgent. But working with each office as to what kind of frequency, so we have the chance to have that direct interaction. I see Jay Bloom is here. Now, he stood earlier, but Jay has been there from the beginning on this. So let's embarrass Jay and just say, Jay, thanks for all your great work, going back to when Ted Wheeler was the county chair, leading us right through this moment. Mayor, before we dismiss this panel and take testimony, let's maybe come back to the piece I mentioned about Leslie Forum.
Okay, good. But I think Commissioner Novick had a question.
I just wanted to ask, I mean, are there other cities that have had particularly, you know, successful and innovative strategies to ensure healthy, affordable, accessible, and secure housing for people of all ages? I read this depressing article in the New York Times a couple of months ago just talking about housing affordability that said The only major city in the world that has dealt with the housing affordability problem is Singapore, and what they did was they herded 90% of the population into big high-rises 30 years ago, which sounded kind of depressing. So I was wondering if you had any more encouraging news from around the world.
Alan.
Offer reinforcements.
Yeah, this is his area.
Alan Delatorre, Portland State. There are cities that are out there that are doing some pretty innovative things, although I wouldn't say that it's just on the age-friendly front. I know that on the East Coast there's been some really wonderful work that's been going on. I listened to testimony recently that Eli Spavak gave, and I think he's got some really interesting ideas that kind of merge the small house, new models of thinking. I'd say that if we were looking to cities in particular, that a lot of the work that's been done has been more on the neighborhood level, not on the housing-specific kind of new model piece. So we have an opportunity to innovate and get in front of the curve still. And the pieces are there. The ingredients are you know, mixed and ready to go into the oven. So I think we really are kind of at the forefront and looking for that next kind of opportunity. So timing's there.
Good, thank you.
So I don't have more concrete examples, but I could dig some stuff up as well if you're interested.
That'd be great.
More of a one-page kind of outline of what's happening innovatively throughout the U.S.
That would be great. Thank you.
Good. Other questions? Okay.
Just a comment, Mayor. last week, I attended a elder financial fraud forum at the Q Center. It was co-hosted by the Attorney General's Office, Elders in Action, and other partners. And Leslie was in her customary role as the convener and the host, fielding questions. And I will say that what we learned that day was pretty alarming about how pervasive elder financial fraud is and how vulnerable older adults are to these scam artists that have absolutely no shame. Leslie's been at Elders in Action for over 14 years, and Commissioner Fritz and I have had the honor of working with her for 6 years. And for the last 2.5 years, she's been the executive director. And with very heavy heart, I learned yesterday that she's leaving Elders in Action. She's taking a leadership position at Terwilliger, which is actually good news for all of us because that will be our next destination when we leave the council. And it would be nice to have a friendly face there. But Leslie has just been a superstar at the helm of Elders in Action. And I was with my family the other day at a grocery store, and I spotted her. She came around the corner, and I gave her a big hug, and she was followed, trailed by her husband, who was wondering why some stranger was hugging his wife in a grocery store. And I quickly introduced myself and made it clear that wasn't a regular feature of her shopping, of her ritual at the grocery store. But I can't think of many people who've made as much of an impact as Leslie has locally on this cause. And she will be greatly missed. She will continue to be, obviously, active and in a leadership position. But I really, frankly, can't imagine her without her at Elders in Action. So I want to take this chance to just publicly thank her for her tremendous partnership and her dedication to the cause. And while we're not losing her, she'll still be local and engaged. Thank her for everything she's done at Elders and for us and for our community.
Thank you, Leslie.
And just to add on to that, Leslie, thank you so much for all the work you've done in the transportation funding discussion, helping to try to craft something that where the money is both spent and raised in a fair and rational way.
Yeah. My pleasure.
Thank you. Well, thank you all. Let's take public testimony and then move on to the document. So, please.
We have two people, Ben Pickering and Charles Johnson.
Come on up.
Elderly, Benjamin H. Pickering. Man, the weather blows in. Jeez, it was freezing this morning. Man, the elderly that I see out there, I grew up, and when my dad says, get up and help your grandma and grandpa do something, man, it means, like, you get up and put their feet up and ask them if they need help getting the newspaper or some coffee. But, like, out here that I've been seeing, there's so much elderly, and that's just age, too. Anybody that's out there. I mean, you got this bad weather coming with rain, and then on top of the freeze coming behind the rain, you can only imagine someone's fingertips or their toes or their part of their body or their self being out there freezing. I mean, you got, like, you want to be a stand-up citizen, model American, and you go out there and the kindness of your heart, and you live on prayers, and you got people praying on hell that it'll warm the people up on the out there on the streets, and you got people out here. I've seen army ants build and go into their thing that they build, and they go in and they work as a community. We are all, you want to build like an empire for our state of Portland. You got everybody working in together. I mean, you know, I pray like hell every day, but like settling with my stomach, I can't even imagine. And the weather blows in, the rain, the freezing, the cold, the elderly out there, man, there's solutions to everything. I mean, you make an outreach and a breakthrough. When somebody does something good, another person does it. When someone's doing something they like, or there's a new thing on the market they want to buy, everybody wants to buy it because they think it's cool. It's like biting and going fishing and fishing for the best. You know, we're bad. We're a pretty bad nation here. Everybody, you know, state of Portland, I mean, common sense. I mean, why don't you ask some of the people and bring them up off the street and ask them how they feel and what they're going through. I mean, the emotions, I can't even imagine what one person is thinking when they hear about a killing down the road, or someone walks up and says, hey, man, you're my savior for feeding me and putting some food on my ribs. But being a savior, who is their savior? When they're out there freezing, or someone to call upon, when all they're thinking is when to get to the winter and I have a life to live, I'm worth living. But it's not a fight and battle. It's not, you're not paying people to go out there and learn survival when they're elderly out there, any age out there. I mean, this is ridiculous. There's enough people in this community, everybody working together and everybody all at once working in. I mean, I've seen an army ants. There's a lot of human in this state of Portland to reach out. And I see empty places ongoing on things that they can be helped with and brought to attention and built and brought up and built a structure and something, a solid ground to stand on. It ain't a pot to piss in when you ain't got nothing, no gratitude or leaning
Mr.
leadership.
Pickering. Mr. Pickering.
Gratitude.
Thank you.
So
take
for,
care.
For a breakthrough is like the kindness of your heart and prayers. Man, I believe in prayers. Thank you.
You take care. Charles, good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. For the record, Charles Johnson. And I do actually want to thank Mr. Pickering for that emotional outburst, because when I first came up, I was thinking about talking about 122nd and Stark, where we do have good crosswalk over to the Midland Library, and those upgrades, particularly that intersection, because there's an elder care home just across from there. But I think when Mr. Pickering raises the issue of the weather, we do want to take note to see that when people are going into the emergency shelters last night, is there census and survey work? How many people that went into those emergency shelters last night qualify for elder housing, and how well connected are they to services? You know, the presentation we've had, we know that there's outreach through Elders in Action, Loaves and Fishes, but we know from walking to this building, when we look around, that we see seniors who are highly disconnected, who maybe aren't even going over to the Loaves and Fishes a few blocks away to eat. Instead, they're panhandling or they're at Blanchet House. So I hope that we're working with the Red Cross to know when we have elder presence in the emergency warming shelters. I also came up to speak because I interface fairly regularly with some diehard people from the Occupy movement. There's still an Occupy Portland Elder Caucus. And additionally, my connections with the senior community, besides the conversations I was having at midnight last night with people born in 1937, are knowing residents at Providence, the Providence location at 60th and Burnside. And I didn't hear maybe as much as maybe could be done about interfacing with the large primary care providers, Providence. I'm sure there's probably plan. There's so much for the presenters to talk about that they can't cover everything. But and it would be interesting, though, to know where services provided. I don't know if any of the others, like Kaiser or Care Oregon, also have a housing-connected element. But I think that's one place for further conversation. And I was definitely pleased to hear the mayor bring up the challenge of getting development to suit all price points. A few months ago, we were at the county commission. You mentioned Mirabella and one other, yeah. And then we have one down on the waterfront that is in the past few months, their bonds have been refinanced by our county, public assistance financing, for a place that has no subsidized or low-income requirements within the city of Portland. So we know that even though we're doing better than some cities for elders, we need to sort of tighten that net, because basically that shouldn't happen. If the government is assisting a developer, the developer should be assisting the government in dealing with the neediest people. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay. So thank you very much. So let's, unless there's any further council questions, have a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
And roll call.
Novick.
Very much appreciate the report and everybody's efforts. And we'll continue to strive to do better and informed by the best research we can get. Aye.
Fritz.
It's good to have these annual reports so that we're not just adopting policies, but we're reporting back on what we're doing about them. And then I do appreciate the pledge to continue doing so. I'm very happy with the work that I believe was initiated by the Commission on Disability and is now being taken to new heights with Commissioner Fish. Thank you very much, all of you, for your partnership. And thank you, Leslie, for your leadership at Elders in Action. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I want to thank all of our honored guests today for joining us for this presentation. This age-friendly action plan is a reminder that we do our best work in partnership with the community. And I have a number of thank yous that I'd like to offer. First, to my fellow council members, the mayor and my colleagues, for really embracing this work and for supporting it. And we will, in the regular budget cycle, come back and renew a request for a budget item. And we're not going to let New York City take the lead on this one, so you've put the marker down. I want to thank all of the talented people who have been serving on the Age-Friendly Portland Advisory Council, giving their time and their thoughtful consideration to this work. The list is in the back of the report that my colleagues have, and it's really an all-star list of people in our community that are working on this goal to be the most age-friendly community city of any city in America. So thank you all for your great work. I want to thank my public advocate, George Hocker. George is, to me, a living reminder of why it's important that we have a fully accessible city. I think this is his fifth or sixth career. And George has a schedule that makes me blush. And this city, when George talks about an accessible city, he's talking about a city that's accessible for George and Marcia and for all of us, and that's extremely important. So, George, thank you for your work. To Margaret Neal and to Alan and to Portland State University Institute on Aging, this is, you know, we are regularly given reminders of the community benefit of having PSU and a strong academic institution with all these vital programs serving the community. I seem to recall there's something about let knowledge serve the community as part of the logo. And the Institute on Aging is not just an academic center. It's engaged practically in helping move scholarship into legislation, into the web of what we do. So thank you to you and Alan for your tireless work. To Bandana Shrestha, who could not join us, and our partners at AARP Oregon. They're just hugely helpful. And finally, to Leslie Forn and her team at Elders in Action. Elders does so much that doesn't get attention. And if they got as much attention in the media as the silly stuff, I think the public would be really surprised. I learned something last week, Mayor, in the area of combating elder financial fraud, which has just exploded. And we know that because we get emails and phone calls at home regularly, and we call back when someone says, this is the IRS calling, there's a problem. They want to get our Social Security number and bank information to verify who we are in order then to scam us. And it's happening. It's exploded. But there are over 70 elder advocates through Elders in Action that are helping vulnerable seniors in our community deal just with this problem. And they've actually been very successful getting restitution. And one of the things that we also learned last week is that the banks have been a little slow to get the records to the police bureau that they need to prosecute these cases. So the city's going to take that up and work with our bank partners to speed that up, because no one should have to wait 10 months to get the documentation necessary to prosecute the bad guys. So, Leslie, thank you, and we'll have another occasion to further embarrass you. I am very proud to be council liaison to Elders in Action, and I'm equally proud that I'm on a council that believes your work is important. Thank you all. Aye.
Hales.
Thank you all for your work, and I want to encourage more of it. Back to Lois's story, we're good, but we're not as good as we need to be. And I think the public sector work that has to take place is important, but so are all the connections that Commissioner Fish mentioned between us and the nonprofit sector, or even the private sector. So I want to encourage you to be a little more pushy about the connections that we ought to make, to say, hey, if the economy's growing, where are the jobs for the folks that want an income after they're retired? Or do we have an economic strategy for that? Hey, the shipyard's growing, we need more welders. Where's the mentoring program where we find retired welders and teach young people how to weld? Hey, we see a need for housing in this neighborhood, but you know, there's almost all the wrong zoning. So it's calling us to make those connections. I don't think, even though we have this amazing network of connections mm-hmm. between the city and the nonprofit sector in particular, I don't think we make all the connections that we need to make in order for everybody to be effective. So that requires sometimes you calling those unmade connections to our attention to say, hey, did you think about including an elder strategy here? And I could use that, frankly. I think we do a pretty good job as a city, but I think we haven't made all the connections that we can make. And not all of them are changing public policy or spending public money, though those are good things to do, too. Some of them are just making those connections with other partners. So I'm very interested. We're about to sign a pledge to do more, and part of my pledge to do more is to help make more of those connections. You know, in a rising economy, in a city that's growing in population, growing in our elder population, and with a lot of young people who need to learn skills in order to compete in a new economy, seems like there are all kinds of ways that we ought to work well together. In a city that's one of 11 around the country that's participating in the Black Male Achievement Initiative, where we're looking for ways to break the cycle that has plagued young African-American men in education and the economy and in the criminal justice system, where are some mentors and some partnerships that could help make that effort real and make real change here in Portland? So I see a lot of ways where we could make more of those connections, and I just want to call on you as leaders in this work. Leslie, you'll be a leader in a different capacity, but you'll still be a leader, and I expect to hear from you. So keep it up, but also keep looking for ways that we can work smarter in those ways as well. Very good work. Thank you very much. Aye.
So, Mayor, we have an original and three yes. copies of the pledge. We're going to ask each of the members of the council to come down and sign. Then we're going to take a group picture with all of our honored guests.
Good plan.
Yep, we can go
come on this side. We'll fill out the links.
Holds. I'm shaking with his hand today. Thanks so much. Thanks so much.
Thank you all.